Hello, hello, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Wild Virginia Virtual Coffee Talk. I'm Katie Keller, Publicity and Outreach Director with Wild Virginia, and today I'm really excited about our guest, Eleanor Goldfield. She is a grassroots activist, journalist, and she's also the filmmaker of A Hard Road of Hope. And I'm really excited. I actually watched the film. I'm anxious to sort of dig into the issues that Hard Road of Hope showcases that's happening with our neighbors in West Virginia. I know that, you know, with our pipeline work with Wild Virginia, you know, proposed pipelines going through West Virginia into Virginia, you know, we have to sort of support each other as neighboring states. So, Eleanor, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. So Hard Road of Hope, it really digs into a lot of the issues, the opioid crisis, mountaintop removal, you know, fracked gas, moving from coal to gas. So I guess if we could start, what was sort of the motivation behind creating this film? Like, what situation really pushed you to create it?
So one of the things that's been very important for me since I started doing this kind of journalism, roughly, I'd say in 2010, I started doing this kind of journalism ahead of Occupy, was that I want to, if possible, go to the places that I'm talking about so that I'm not getting like a secondhand story. Because one of the biggest issues I have with corporate media is that they're like, yeah, we just heard from some dude in the intelligence agency that this is happening. So sure. And of course I can't go to all of the places, you know, I'm a freelance and live mostly off of Patreon, but when possible, I like to go to places to get the scoop and to get the scoop from people that you don't hear from and that aren't highlighted in typical corporate media. So the people on the ground, the people who are affected by these dirty energy projects and so on. So the trip to West Virginia was really going to be that, you know, pretty straightforward. I had at the time a TV show with Free Speech TV that was a weekly show that talked about a lot of these issues. I wrote for, you know, several different outlets about these things. And so I had no intention of creating a movie when I went down there initially, but I felt that I wanted to cover so many different sides of this issue, and also the fact that what we think about when we think about West Virginia is really just not even the half of it. It's just a very shallow, predominantly like a like looking down on kind of paradigm that we have when folks talk about West Virginia, but that's completely skewed. And it's skewed on purpose, right? Not just for people outside of West Virginia, but for people inside West Virginia to think less of themselves, to not connect with their radical past, and feel the drive to protect their beautiful home. So I realized that, you know, I think I might need a longer medium for this. And so I kind of fell backwards into creating a film. But that's really how it came about.
Sure. Well, I know that, you know, sort of in blue collar areas in any part of the country, but I mean, especially Southern Appalachia or Appalachia, depending on who you ask, you know, that is sort of the perception that they have of themselves. But it's important for people outside of those areas in advocating for those people who are being affected by this corporate greed, to know the true story. And that's one thing that I really appreciated about your film. So, you know, you interviewed a ton of great people in the film. Could you talk a little bit about maybe your favorite interviews, either that you did showcase in the film or through editing, maybe that didn't make it in?
Yeah, sure. And, you know, to your point, I think there's one moment in the film that kind of pinpoints what you mentioned. And I was speaking with Terry Steele, who's a UMWA member. It's United Mine Workers of America, and he's a former coal miner. And he said that, you know, environmentalists come in here and they think that we haven't addressed the issue of environmentalism because either we don't believe in climate change or we're just too stupid to do it. And this is something that I grew up partially in North Carolina, and this is something that I've seen with groups that go into places And they're like, hey, let me explain to you what climate change is. And you're like, okay, I'm not stupid. and there is that, like, it's a very problematic paradigm and perspective that a lot of folks can come in with, and they find a lot of closed doors because no one likes to be talked to like they're an idiot. And folks in Appalachia, just like anywhere else in the world, really don't need to be told what it means to be oppressed. They don't need to be told that their water is poisoned or what have you. They need to be listened to, and they need folks to collaborate with them on building alternatives. In terms of, you know, favorite interviews, I'd say all of them. And I know that that's like a mom being like, I love all my children equally. But I really do, because I feel like the folks that I was able to speak to were also varied and yet had so many similarities, just like the folks that I've seen in other frontline communities, whether that be in Pennsylvania or Louisiana or California. It's like these people all have a shared interest in not just surviving, but thriving, which, you know, that's not really that crazy. And they love where they live. They love their home. They're very proud of their history there. They're proud of who they identify as. And they just want people to listen to them, and they want to share this reality, and they want to feel that there's some kind of way of addressing it. You know, they want to feel that there is hope, even if it's a difficult and jagged hope. So I'd say, yeah, like all of them really. And I love hearing from people who have seen the movie, who they really related to, and as well. But I think that, you know, everyone that I was lucky enough to speak to really left, a strong impression on me, and that I'm still glad to have created those relationships and friendships.
Yeah. So I will tell you my favorite. I can't recall the man's name. It was the guy that was cussing up a storm. And I believe he was the one who was talking about, you know, you're driving up or you pass an old truck on the road, mm-hmm. and they have a sticker, you know, that, you know, Friends of Coal. Yeah. And then, you know, you see the big, you know, nice SUVs rolling through with the same sticker, and you just sit there and you wonder, why does that old pickup truck have that sticker on it? So that was probably my favorite. I really related to that guy, I think.
Awesome. Yeah, that's Terry Steele. He is.
Okay. Yeah.
He's wonderful.
Well, so do you keep up with the folks that you interviewed, you know, throughout your time in West Virginia?
I do. I've gotten very close to particularly Paul Corbett Brown, who's the president of Keeper of the Mountains, and have interacted with him, you know, unfortunately not in person because of the pandemic, but have interacted with him quite a bit remotely since creating the film. And I've kept in touch with all of the folks who are in the film. Predominantly one of the main reasons was that when I released the film, I wanted to make sure that the folks who were in it felt that I did right by them. But also because I don't, you know, I have a sticker on my laptop that says I'm one of the journalists you can trust. And I feel like part of that is, as someone who's been on both sides of this, being someone that's been interviewed for activist things before, I don't want to feel like people are extracting my story and then just leaving, making it, you know, an article that they make some money off of and then buy, I don't care. I want people to care enough to come back and to build these relationships so that there's a collaborative effort here between the rad independent media and the folks on the front line. So that's been something that's been very important to me as both an organizer and as a journalist. So I have kept up with folks, and folks should also know that this is the 100th year anniversary of the Battle of Blair Mountain. So there are, I'm not sure if it's going entirely online, but there are some events at the Mine Wars Museum in Matewan, West Virginia. They're planning some things to commemorate that powerful event.
Sure. So before, I'd love if you could talk about that event. But first, you mentioned COVID. So I know that here in Virginia, we've seen agencies and, you know, politicians, of course, sort of try to use, and well, we've seen, you know, Trump certainly tried to use the pandemic to his advantage in terms of lifting environmental regulations, which, you know, is unfortunate, using a pandemic to what, you know. So have you seen that in your talks and, you know, keeping up with the folks that you interviewed in West Virginia? Have you run into that at all, you know, politicians or agencies using the pandemic to sort of continue this process of, you know, gas and fracking and all that jazz?
Yeah. And I think, I mean, the work that y'all do, particularly on the issue of the MVP, which is something that I've followed for several years now, and I know that they have clearly not stopped or let up the gas, so to speak, on trying to push that project through. And, you know, the same is true in West Virginia. These are considered, you know, not just critical infrastructure, but they're considered to be necessary and essential. Like, it's essential to destroy our ecosystems. And it's, I mean, it's so absurd, but this is definitely something that we see happening in West Virginia. And I'd say, you know, anywhere else too, but, you know, these are considered to be absolutely necessary.
Sure. So we'll see how things pan out, you know, as we sort of continue, hopefully to the, you know, light at the end of this tunnel. I'm thinking 2021 is the year, you know, if we continue in the right direction. But so the Battle of Blair Mountain, 100 year anniversary. Could you talk about that event and what it means for the folks, the good people of West Virginia?
Sure. So one little tidbit that I just like throwing out there, because it totally shocked me when I found out about it. Because again, growing up in North Carolina, I heard the term redneck quite a bit, and it was always used in a derogatory way. You didn't want to be a redneck. And I learned in West Virginia that the term redneck actually comes from the mine wars. You know, the Battle of Blair Mountain is a part of this larger entity of the mine wars that we talk about. And it happened because the workers, the mine workers, tied red bandanas around their necks as a symbol of their solidarity and as a symbol of their resolve to fight for their basic human rights, you know, one of which is being paid in U.S. money. They were paid in company scrip, which is, you know, people might be familiar with that song, "Sold My Soul to the Company Store." That's where that comes from, because they couldn't actually pay for things in American dollars because they weren't paid in them. They lived in company housing, they lived on company land, et cetera, et cetera. Something that's incredibly powerful about this movement is that they kept mine workers in separate areas. They told them exactly where they could live. And they told them, for instance, you know, don't talk to the black miners, they're savages. Don't talk to the Jewish miners, they eat babies or whatever. You know, like all of this horrific propaganda that had the goal of keeping people separated so that they couldn't organize together. And so against all of these odds and against all of that powerful propaganda, these mine workers came together and said, look, we are all suffering under the same oppression via the mine lords and the mine barons, and we should do something about it. We actually have power. And this is, you know, where Mother Jones comes in, and there might be other folks that people might recognize from sort of like whispers about this, but we're not really taught about the mine wars. And so it's vital to remember this history, to remember that people came together, not just to march and to go on strike, but to actually fire upon these coal barons in order to make it very clear that they were not backing down and they wanted some basic rights, and they won them. You know, they won the right to be paid in American money and other things along with that. So this is a story that's incredibly powerful to dig up and very understandable as to why the powers that be don't teach it. You know, one of the folks I talked to, Wilma Steele, grew up in Matewan, West Virginia, which is where this happened. It's the same area, the Matewan Massacre. And she said, I was never told about this. I was never taught about it in school. And you can see why, you know, teaching kids that, hey, if you're oppressed and if you're treated poorly at work, you could just organize. And not only that, you could like take up arms and like shoot at your bosses if they still don't answer. Like that is some really powerful organizing and not something that the powers that be want to want people to learn. And that goes with coal, but it also goes with fracking. Something that I talk about in the film is that fracking, the oil and gas industries are taking what coal did and repurposing it in the here and now. So these are still tactics and these are still things that we need to be aware of and recognize the past in dealing with the present.
That is one of the highlights and themes that I loved about your film, you know, talking about the propaganda that they just recycled or repurposed. It's a pretty sick piece of our, you know, larger society when we aren't taught, you know, those things about organizing and, you know, fighting oppression and, you know, everyone, you know, becoming their own activist, but, you know, joining together as a group, and they're just, you know, recycling this propaganda. And, you know, not teaching things like the Battle of Blair Mountain. You know, I thought we could talk about a little bit in our closing thoughts. You know, you created this wonderful film. I really encourage everyone to check out. I think, do you have a screening coming up for this one?
I do. On April 24th, there's a screening happening. It's a screening that's going to bring together a lot of environmental organizers from across the country. Paul Corbett Brown, who's in the film, will also be there. He's the president of Keeper of the Mountains. So he'll be there as well. And that's on April 24th. And folks can email coalregions@gmail.com in order to register for that.
Wonderful. And we'll be sure to include that in the show notes. So everyone check out that screening. I really did enjoy this film. But closing thoughts, Eleanor, you know, you created this film, you do some investigative journalism to, you know, highlight some of these stories of, you know, the oppressed voices. Tips for, you know, maybe our folks that want to become an activist, but don't know how, or folks that want to get involved in, you know, issues like these.
Well, I'd say if you're listening to this and you're familiar with Wild Virginia, you are well on your way. I think it's really just about wherever you are in your home place, connecting with people who are doing this work or who are interested in doing this work. You know, one of the things that I also do, I live in Washington, D.C., and I organize with Mutual Aid here. And, you know, it's really just a collection of neighbors who care coming together to address the needs of our neighbors. I mean, I think one of the problems that I think has been created by capital A activism is that people think that you have to either have all these resources or you have to know the right people, or no, you just have to care and then connect with other people who care. And thereby, you know, your networks will grow and you'll connect with other people that care. So I think, and that might sound a little nebulous, but I don't really think that there's a blueprint. There's not really like a do these steps, because everybody's experience will be different depending on where you live, what the needs of your community and your home place are, what battles you're fighting. And it'll look differently, but the ideas will be the same. It's the idea of fighting for basic rights and building a future that is founded on justice and sustainability and livability.
Well, beautifully said. Make those meaningful connections, do your own research, see what the needs are in your community. And, you know, it's going to look different circumstance by circumstance. But Eleanor, thank you so much for joining me today for this episode of Wild Virginia Virtual Coffee Talk. I encourage everyone to go check out hardroadofhope.com.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for tuning in for this episode of Wild Virginia Coffee Talk. For more information on our campaigns, please visit www.wildvirginia.org. Stay wild, Wild Virginians.